Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello and welcome to the Leader Manager Coach podcast. Welcome along. It's Rob Riles welcoming you to another edition. In today's program, I'm really pleased to be able to bring you somebody from across the pond who's given up their time to talk about their niche and their expertise. And you will soon find out why I invited this gentleman onto the podcast. Andy Neely is a gentleman who manages into leaders. To give you a little bit of a background, and I want Andy to put me right if any of this isn't quite correct. He's a principal of Neely Leadership Group, the owner of a large retail business. He currently serves as a keynote speaker. He's also a corporate trainer, a coach, and a consultant who presents workshops on leadership topics and works with numerous Fortune 500 organizations. He published his first book, The Golden Principles: Life and Leadership Lessons from a Rescued Dog, which uses simple lessons learned from a beautiful golden retriever. This book was honored by .com with a top 100 best books of the year award. So we're not talking about somebody who doesn't know how to write either. And but not least, Andy's methodology, which I want to get onto in the podcast, revolves around a very specific four-tiered approach to leadership necessities. So Andy Neely, welcome to Leader Manager Coach.
Well, Rob, I'm happy to be with you. I might need to have you read that credentializing piece to my wife to remind her periodically how important I pretend to be. It's just a pleasure to be on your podcast with you and getting to spend a little bit of time listening to some of your podcasts and on your website. I think I'm talking to somebody, obviously, who's equally passionate about management and leadership excellence. So I'm looking forward to our visit together.
Perfect.
And so, Rob, I particularly want to thank you. For me here in the States, it's Friday morning and I'm still in the office. You thanked me for my time a minute or two ago. You're doing this podcast on a Friday afternoon. The only thing between you and the pub, I suspect, is me. So thank you for getting together here late in the day in the UK.
No, it's a pleasure, and it's no problem whatsoever. Look, the first thing I like to do for the listeners is just to fill in a little bit of the understory. So fill in a few gaps about how you came to the point that you're doing now, just so you know, you've got a little bit of a free rein, so we know the gentleman who's who we're talking to. So sure, you know, how did sure. you get to where you are now, if that's not a long-winded yeah. question, Andy?
Well, really, there are probably two paths, Rob. I unfortunately had the experience of early in my career just a couple of really bad bosses in my youth. I worked my way through secondary school and university, working in the construction industry, and just had one particularly bad boss that had anger management issues and would get physically violent at times. And I remember sitting in the cab of our vehicle as we drove from job site to job site, dealing with this incredibly angry person. And I just remember thinking, you know, Jerry is not just a bad boss. He is a bad person. He epitomized for me all the things that you and I would say, you know what, that's not going to engender loyalty or trust or dedication. And at the same parallel path, Rob, early in my life, while I don't come from a religious family, I found faith as a youth. And, you know, you had a recent podcast about Marcus Aurelius. I kind of chuckle with folks that I'm talking about leadership. You get past Jesus Christ and Marcus Aurelius, and there's really not much new about leadership. And the whole idea of self-control and servant leadership. And so I've got that path that I'm doing in my studies and in the heart of how I'm trying to become a better person. And then I've got Jerry and a couple of other people that I worked under that I thought, boy, they're like the anti-mentor of anything that would be good about leadership. At this point, Rob, that was decades ago, but it ignited in me a fire to say, man, what makes a good leader a good leader? Hence, the story that you mentioned, the books that I've written, the small businesses that we own here in Central Texas, where I live, as well as the consulting and coaching work that I get to do around the states and internationally. So that's my brief story. Bad example, okay. Good example.
Perfect. Perfect. It gives us a great place to start from. And I think that everybody can relate to having examples in life of those we wish to emulate and those we learn a lesson from and think, there's a lesson here, and it may be the antithesis of that. And I think from, you know, you're obviously a lifelong learner. What I loved about what you've just said particularly was the phrase servant leadership. Yeah. Excuse my autobiographical stance for this, but I think it's the greatest form of leadership. Tell me a little bit about why you use that phrase, because it's important to me.
Well, you know, Robert Greenleaf here in the States wrote the book Servant Leadership more than a generation ago at this point, and he really articulated this. You know, the vision for too long in too many organizations, whether they're in the sports world or whether they're in the business world, has been the manager, the coach, the boss, the CEO at the top of the pyramid, and everyone serves up. And what Robert Greenleaf caught was the most successful organizations really go back and capture that old leadership truth from Christ, from Marcus Aurelius, from the servanthood model that revolutionized the Western world, that turned the world upside down in just a couple of centuries. And I used to talk about servant leadership. You've turned the pyramid upside down. I recently heard another thought leader that I thought had an even better analogy than upside down pyramid. They talked about effective leadership is actually the roots of the tree, and it feeds nourishment up mm-hmm. so that the tree can flourish. The tree still is the one that's doing all of the work in the wind and surviving the weather and photosynthesizing and nourishing and growing. But the only reason it can do that is because it's got the structure and the feeding of the roots. And any successful organization, whether it's on the turf or whether it's in the boardroom, in today's world, any long-term sustainable organizational success has got to be based on leaders seeing themselves as the roots of the tree, not the top of the pyramid.
And is this something that you've implemented? It would be strange if not, but implemented in your own businesses.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Have you got any stories about how revolutionary that's been, or not necessarily revolutionary, but how it's worked, or how hard it was to do, or challenges, or things that might illustrate this in your own life, Andy?
Yeah, I unfortunately, Rob, I think, Coach, if I was being perfectly honest with you, most of my stories are stories of mistakes that I learned the hard way and then hopefully tried to figure it out the better way. I really have two paths to my career. On the one hand, as you announced, I do speeches and workshops and training. I've written a couple of books. I was in Houston, about 3 hours away from where I live, earlier this week, working with a client. The other half of my life, in some respects, completely separate. My wife and I own a series of retail businesses, 5 storefront retail businesses. We have swim centers. We teach little children to swim. I don't. But I used to be a swimmer and a WSI water safety instructor. We own these franchise swim centers where today we've got about 125 employees that all percolate up. I've got a management team of about 10 people that reports to me. And Rob, the lessons I think I've learned working with these managers, it's an interesting dynamic because here in the States, a retail position is typically a lower paid, higher turnover. People come and go. There's lack of stability. And Rob, I'm not sure I'm any good at what I do, but I have managers that have been with me for more than 10 years now. And I've seen their lives change from struggling paycheck to paycheck to paycheck to being able to put their kids through university now. And so part of it, I think, is simply serving your people well. Now, Rob, you and I could both tell stories to your listeners about, you know, I went the extra mile for somebody and they took advantage of me. And I think you and I both know there have been times when your trust was taken advantage of. I would say at the end of the day, the trust of a leader, that's one of the risks you take. I've overpaid people. I've kept people on staff longer. I've looked the other way. But at the end of the day, I also have five pretty successful small businesses in a retail environment. And I have people that would say I'm the best boss they've ever worked for. And this job that they showed up for that they thought was just another one of the reoccurring retail jobs, they've been with our firm now for more than 10 years. So I think there's a tension there of excellence that you never quite get it right.
No, I think what you're saying, or what it sounds to me like you're saying, Andy, is that no matter what, you did the right thing for you at the time. So you followed your conscience, your little voice, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
And the reaction or the response from the third party was out of your control. So if they decided to be dishonest with you or didn't return your good, what you considered to be your, you know, your exemplary way of doing things. And, you know, that's a leader, because you know, it's not in our control, is it? And
right.
Who are we to judge them for not seeing what you saw or they saw? And you still do the right thing no matter what. I think that's what you're saying, and it's beautiful.
You try to. And there's a tension there, isn't there, Rob? Whether you're on the pitch or whether you're in business, you know, it's a life of trade-offs. And so you try to do the best that you can do, recognizing my goal is to support the people underneath me. My goal is to give them what they need to be successful, to the best of my ability, hoping that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah. You can. It's doing what's in your control, isn't it, Andy? Not you cannot control the other's response. You can only control your bit, which is I think is what you're saying. Look, I'm definitely want to get onto these to the crux of these four leadership principles. But before we do that, I'd really like you to just tell me the inspiration behind the book that I mentioned in the intro, because I love dogs, and it sounds like you stepped out a little bit, really, because, you know, I'm not sure anybody who would want to think, okay, I'm going to write a successful book, I'm going to write it about a dog. So go on, let's hear that, because it sounds a great story.
Well, Rob, you know, a little bit like you, I've read some of your blogs. You're a good writer. People have told me that I'm a pretty good writer. I'm a bit of a storyteller. I didn't really intend on putting any of that together, Rob, but shortly after my wife and I got married and we got our first place, it was time to get our first dog. And my wife's parents had a friend who was a veterinarian here in the States, and a dog was found out in the desert in Phoenix, Arizona. Oh, the name of the dog, we ended up naming the dog Alex, for Alexander the Great. You and I think are both a little bit of fans.
I love it.
And he came from the desert. He was a bit of a lawless dog, although he was very well trained himself. He just thought he was in charge all the time.
I love it.
We thought that's an appropriate name. Alex became our first golden. And then very shortly after that, Rob, we would come home from, both of us were working long hours at that point, and Alex had figured out how to break out of the house, hop our 6-foot-tall cement fence, just so he could go out and play with the neighborhood kids. And he was destroying mini blinds and clawing through. And it wasn't that he was a bad dog. He just was a lonely dog. So our vet said, yeah, your dog needs a dog. And so we rescued a second dog. And that was many years ago now, Rob. And we've rescued, at this point, we've rescued more than, we've rescued 10 golden retrievers, not all at once. We typically have two dogs that are slightly different ages. And as one dog ages out, we rescue another one. But we've had dogs for since 4 years into our marriage. So we've been rescuing dogs a long time. Gosh, it was a number of years ago now. One of the dogs we rescued, Rob, was a horribly abused dog. He came from a puppy mill. Here in the States, we have breeders that don't really care about the breed. They just want to make money. Raising and golden retrievers are very popular. This dog was rescued from the state of Alabama. 65 dogs were rescued from squalid, horrible conditions in Redford. Ended up here in Texas when we were looking for a companion dog for one of our dogs. So we rescued Redford, and Rob, I'll tell you, he was the worst dog we ever rescued. Every bad instinct he had. And it took us a long time. Well, ultimately Redford became the topic of one of my speeches that I gave in corporations about earning trust, because with Redford, it took a long time for him to trust us. And there were just many lessons we had to learn to become better dog leaders. So I'm telling the story of Redford. And then it was just one of those God things, Rob. I'm at a conference. I'm sharing the Redford Principle. That was the name of this presentation I did, the Redford Principle. It takes time to earn trust. I can see your head nodding. These are principles you're very familiar with. And a publisher and I started talking, a small boutique publisher here in the States. And he said, have you got any other stories about your dogs? And man, I just remember telling Kent, I think most of what I've learned about leadership has nothing to do with my doctorate, has nothing to do with my businesses, has nothing to do with my consulting. I think most of what I've learned about leadership, I've learned from these rescued dogs. And he said, that'd make a great book. And a year later, the Golden Principles came out. He changed the title from the Redford Principle. He said, nobody's going to know that. Furthermore, Andy, Paul Newman and Robert Redford are kind of tied together, and people are going to be confused. It's a golden retriever. So obviously the golden rule, the golden principles. And then Rob, 2 years later, somebody at Amazon loved this book and promoted it. And I get to call myself a best-selling author, but a best-selling Amazon author, as you probably know, is much different. In fact, my wife asked me regularly, so best-selling author, when are we going to start making money on your book? We haven't made any money on this book, but I do get to call myself a best-selling author. And I can see it in your face. You're a dog person. I'm a dog person. These are simple, sweet stories of dogs, right? And learning to do a play bow and coming in slowly and you know, not wearing a hat and glasses and trying to be big, really in some respects practicing servant leadership. I'm at the bottom, I'm not at the top. I'm not here to dominate you, I'm here to earn your trust. And so simple stories, but I think most of the things in life that are true about leadership are probably pretty simple.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful story woven together. I mean, anybody who is a dog lover and has a dog or has had a dog or has lost one, you know, trust and that, you know, you can be angry with them and then 10 seconds later, they're kind of okay with it. It's not a problem like with human beings. It lasts for ages. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They embody servant leadership. Yeah. Because they do. I think you've nailed it. So no wonder somebody liked it. And and hooray for your wife for place. So that's what they're there for. That's great.
That's right. Well, and Rob, today we've got actually Redford passed about 5 years ago now, and his companion dog, his younger dog that we got to be his companion, Mickey, equally challenged, has got some. He had a distemper as a puppy. He's got some neurological issues. He's 13 today, Rob, and he is slowing down. He's having trouble getting up at times. And I know you as a dog person, I can see it in your eyes. I mean, there is just this rhythm of how do we love our dogs well, because they give us so much. And you know, we're in the last few years of Mickey's time with us probably. And you want to give these dogs a good life, right?
Of course. Beautiful story. Okay, look, I don't want to surpass this and miss out on kind of giving due time to your four principles, because I know that forms a real crux of your work and your life and your teachings and what you talk about. So would you like to start to tell us about that? So, because I think a lot of the people who are listening will be really keen to hear about that and try and implement some things in their own work lives, Andy.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it came about again organically, Rob. I'm I've got my dissertation studies on effective leadership. I've read exhaustively in the area of leadership literature, but really I'm in the trenches a lot. I'm working with managers and leaders inside corporations. I'm leading my own organization. And I'm just asking the question, what makes managers better leaders? And really what emerged was somewhat organically, and you're going to resonate with this. In fact, I suspect you and I will have a good give and take conversation. I realize that when I look at a good manager who's transforming themselves into what you and I would consider to be a high performing leader, getting the best out of their people, they're bringing four things to the table. They're a person of passion, of strategy, of vision. I call it the conviction piece because they've got their eyes up. They're not just thinking about the next 3 minutes on the pitch. They're thinking about how do we get through the next 90 minutes and what's our bigger picture strategy or what's our three-year plan at the company. They're able to look at a P&L and a balance sheet and manage risk well. They're not just doing the task in front of them. They've got the bigger picture. In my swim schools, Rob, nobody should ever know this statistic, but Texas has a very big coastline, the Gulf of Mexico. People think of Texas with kind of John Wayne and tumbleweeds. We are typically one of the worst states in the U.S. for childhood drowning problems. I talk about that regularly with my team members. You're not just showing up to a retail job. You're saving lives because little kids need to learn to swim. And Rob, I will take to my grave the pride I have. Last year, our five swim schools did just under 150,000 swim lessons. Well, wow. Part of my job as a leader is to remind my people in the midst of dealing with crying kids and frustrated parents and bathing suits that leak and all the issues of chemicals in the water and an indoor school, all in the midst of that. Part of my job is to get their eyes up. There is a reason you're doing this work, that conviction piece. And, you know, I suspect you've seen that effectively with the firms you've worked with and the sports teams you've led, that they're looking to you in the midst of things to remind them there's a bigger goal, right? That's that conviction piece.
Are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com Leader Manager Coach.
That sounds to me very much like somebody who has a vision. And I think the phrase, the bigger picture, above and beyond the detail of the day is what you're talking about.
In fact, you know, the four of them, conviction, competence, character, and covenant. I'll talk about all four of them a little bit more broadly, but I really do think in some respects it begins with vision. If there's one thing that separates a manager from a leader, it's that they see the bigger picture, or at least they fight to see the bigger picture. They realize there's more here. In many of the companies that you and I work with, the more there is simply the satisfaction of a job well done so that I can take care of my family, so that I can get my young child to university, so that I can be a good corporate citizen. Is there a reason that I'm doing what I'm doing? Calling. I think sometimes people say, you know, the calling. Here in the States 25 years ago, there was a humorous movie, The Blues Brothers, who were a bad band that had to travel around. And at one point in the middle of the movie, they said, "We're on a mission from God." Well, they sensed that they had a higher work that they were supposed to do. That's conviction. The second thing that I observed in folks that you and I would consult with and coach that were doing a good job was this whole area of competence, of execution, of being able to get their teams to perform. And so that it's an easy way for me to remember it, I found another C word, competence. So we've got conviction, competence, and then we'll talk about character and covenant in a minute. But competence from a leadership perspective is not just are you good at your job, is are you able to get your team to perform well, the people that are under your tutelage. You know, and I was on your website looking at some of the good successes, and you know, people people were better off because they were coached by a good coach, right? And they they had some success in their endeavors, the whole idea of execution. I think for a leader, part of that is managing risk well and understanding when do we gamble and when don't we gamble, and how do we know when to go for it and when not to go for it. And that's not a management, that's a leadership. That you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, as you and I talked about, but being able to measure risk and to effectively know how do I set my team up for success rather than failure. That's that competence piece, the ability to get your team to execute well. Second of my four leadership necessities.
Can I ask you something on that? So
yeah,
I suppose I might be jumping the gun a bit here, but sometimes you find people who ain't that good at executing, but they're amazing in terms of their personality and their character and their leadership skills, or their their trust. Just they're somebody who wants to learn and they trust. Yeah. So sometimes there's a compromise. Yeah.
Well, I probably wouldn't use the word compromise, but I just think you've acknowledged what's real. You know, I work with a lot of sales teams here in the States, and oftentimes the best sales manager was not the best salesperson. Their competence wasn't in the day-to-day selling. It was in managing the team and setting them up to be successful. And, you know, I don't know as much about the beautiful game as I'd like to, although all of us in the States have become huge fans of Ted Lasso. So we've learned more about soccer in the last couple of years than anything else. But on the American football field, one of the great coaches in the National Football League, Bill Belichick, who is probably going to go down as one of the greatest football coaches of all time, was not an NFL player. He played in college, but he never played at the highest levels, and yet he's been one of the highest coaches. I think that's the point that you're making, where the ability to get your team to execute well doesn't mean you have to be better at what they're doing than they were. You just have to create the context for them to excel.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a big parallel in soccer, that a lot of the eminent managers and the greatest who are considered to be weren't necessarily excellent players themselves. Yeah. They you know, it's a different skill set. But yeah. No, beautiful. Okay, so we've got the conviction and we've got the vision, and then we've got the competence and the execution, which we've just kind of filled out a little bit. Yeah. So where do we go from there, Andy?
So the third one I observed was this character one. And it takes me all the way back to Jerry in the construction truck. He wasn't just a bad boss. You know, he was kind of a bad person that had anger management issues. And gosh, you know, the truism, you will never be a better leader than you are a person, is a long-term truism. I think you can fake it for a while. But if you're going to leave a long-term legacy, and, you know, we're talking about fair-mindedness, other-orientedness, honesty, a sense of what's right, these embedded character traits that I find as a reflection of my faith in Jesus Christ, that you and I have seen together in that stoic approach to life where there's a discipline and a self-denial, those are the leaders that leave lasting legacies, because they have the maturity to not make it about them. And so character, you know, it's not in most of the research findings that I took a look at when I was studying my dissertation, and I kind of scratched my head. I wonder why it isn't in there. And then I recognized part of the reason it's not in there is because, Rob, other than some of your writing and talking, and other than the platform that I try to use, people are scared to bring this to the table at times because they feel like, well, I don't have the right to talk about moral issues in leadership. And man, I just have to say, with my own eyes for more than 25 years now, I've seen when moral failures occur, and I'm not talking just about huge moral fails, when a manager is caught lying, when a manager is caught holding things to themselves, when a manager is not practicing fairness and honesty and other orientedness, it impacts their ability to have people want to follow them. That character piece is critical.
100%. 100%. A couple of things that come to mind, Andy, listening to you to talk there, is one of my favourite phrases that hit me like a bricks, as we say here in the UK, is what you are speaks so loudly, I cannot hear what you say.
Yeah.
And I think that sums up it, for me, what you're saying, you know. And I'm just reading a book by a guy called Ryan Holiday, who's a Texan, who's written the book called Courage is Calling. And it's a beautiful book. It's his depth of knowledge. And he talks about in there exactly what you're talking about, Andy, is those little tiny infringements which pop up in your life and you have an instant decision to make. Do I address this or do I just smooth it over? And not about life-changing decision, so you think at the time, but actually incrementally it is. He talks about how disasters occur, great changes and great he talked about because, and he looks back in hindsight and says, well, the evidence was there, it's just that I chose to turn a blind eye or not to say anything.
Here in the States, Simon Sinek is a popular podcaster and thought leader. One of his best-selling books, Leaders Eat Last, is really based on the understanding in frontline military endeavors. Typically, the good leaders, the good generals, they recognize our troops need to eat before us because they're the ones that are doing the hard work out there. Leaders eat last because they've got the pyramid the right direction, I think. And that's what you and I are talking about, right? You'll never be a better leader than you are a person. Summarizes all of it in some respects.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we've done the conviction. We've talked about the competence and the ability to execute. I think we've lauded the absolute kind of beautiful character.
Well, so the fourth one, Rob, I struggled for a number of years. I couldn't quite put my hands on what I was seeing good leaders that were bringing the best out of their teams. And I'm trying to find a C word so there would be a nice, you know, graphic there, conviction, competence, character. And for a while, I called it communication, consistency. And then I stumbled upon kind of an old-fashioned word, a word that we don't use much in the States, but probably needs to be brought into our vocabulary, because I recognized when you look at good leaders that are practicing the type of leadership you and I have been talking about, there is both a personal and a formal aspect to their leadership. And the word that captures that really well is this old-fashioned word, covenant. And if I could bring you to Texas with me for just a minute to explain what the word covenant means. Here in the state of Texas, I'm not sure it's true in all other 49 states, but I know my own state. If somebody's going to get married, obviously there's the love and affection. There's that fealty that's in sick or and in health forever and ever. We're going to love one another and the romantic, you know, the connection, a very personal, intimate thing that happens that culminates in a marriage ceremony. The other interesting thing, though, Rob, here in the state of Texas, for a couple to get married, they sign an official document. Actually, the officiant, the legal officiant, signs a document that's recorded with the Secretary of State. There's both a formal recognition that this commitment has taken place and obviously the personal connection. And when I work with the best leaders, I see that they have the ability to make the hard decisions that are in the formal best interest of the mission of the organization. They hold hard conversations. They make difficult decisions. They let people go. They shutter divisions. They do the hard work of formal leadership. And at the same time, Rob, if you and I could see some of the backstories, there was an extra 7 weeks of PTL given, personal time off given, because somebody had a grandparent that was going through cancer chemo and they were the primary caregiver. And it wasn't HR. It wasn't part of the official policy. It was something that leader said, this is just the right thing to do. Yeah. We're going to take that extra. I'll take the hit. It's going to impact our bottom line. I'll take care of that because it's the right thing to do. There's both that personal side and that formal side of leadership. And once I recognized, that's the word covenant. That's really what it is. In some respects, it captures the entire essence of what good leadership looks like. Managers that want to become high-performing leaders, they manage the tension of putting your people first and keeping your organizational mission first. And that tension of leadership, I call it covenant.
It resonates so well with me, Andy. It's beautiful. I'm a self-admitted bibliophile, and I love words, and I can tell you do. You're a writer, and you speak so eloquently, and I can tell how you described your process of needing to find the thing that hit the spot, and you have, haven't you, with that covenant. I agree with you. It encapsulates doing the right thing, even when you don't feel like it, even when there's a massive cost, even when other people will say, hey, are you silly? Are you crazy? But you're still doing the right thing. Exactly. And covenant, as you say, it nails it. I think it's beautiful.
Because it maintains the tension that you and I have talked with some of our clients about, where you can't just be the nice guy that lets people get away with everything. That's not leadership. I prefer to use the term kind rather than nice. I might be making it up a little bit, but leaders need to hold the organization high as well, right? That formal structure. We've got policies, we've got procedures, we've got deadlines, we've got quotas. The tension of all of that needs to be balanced with, and at the end of the day, I want my people to be taken care of. That is a high calling and a scary position, but the managers who get that right, I think they can put their heads down on their pillows at night knowing, I'm not sure anybody ever gets leadership, but I think I'm moving that direction.
I think you're so right. And you're obviously somebody who is in the trenches, because it is about putting your head on the pillow at nighttime and saying, I did my best. Hey, the outcome, and it's the best of the of two outcomes that ain't great, but it's the best we can do. And I think great leaders are put in situations to come up with decisions when there isn't what you'd call a good outcome. It has to be done. And there's a cost. You don't look at yourself. If that cost is to yourself, well, so be it. But that's easy to talk about and difficult to do. Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite graduate school professors, he talked about the difference between static equilibrium and dynamic equilibrium. He said, you got a bowl, you got a marble. In static equilibrium, you just drop the marble into the bowl and eventually it just kind of sits down there and you don't have to do much work. It's just statically at the bottom of the bowl. Leadership is turning the bowl upside down. And you've got the marble and the bowl, but you're always having to do this because you never quite get it right. And that's the challenge of covenant, I think, for good leaders. And, you know, Rob, you and I could both tell stories to your listeners. You know, the last 4 years, all of the rules have changed, and the work from home movement and the societal upheaval we've seen, the pressures here in the States, but you've seen them in the UK just as much as we have with the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, but are we allowed to come out of the pandemic? And now there's a new variety of Omicron and all of the rules have changed. I think it's harder to be a leader in 2023 and beyond than it's ever been before. And so you and I, as we work with our clients and our consulting and our, it's this dynamic equilibrium that never goes away. You never get it right, but you're always working that direction.
But I think, Andy, at the same time, and this just maybe, again, it's we've all got our own view of the world, but there's so much of a need for people to adopt some of your principles, if not all of them. And I think what I'd like to say is, look, none of us are courageous all the time. None of us hit the mark all the time. It's not about being perfect, is it? And I think it's easy to listen to somebody like you who's got a successful business and trains other people and, you know, helps thousands of kids and you know, blimey, does, let's not forget about rescuing dogs, you know? I mean, as much as if you're not a dog lover, you won't get it, but it's not about living a perfect life, is it? It's about getting dirty, dusty, and making mistakes. And if you can move on from that and learn something, hey, because that is what life's about. None of us sit here thinking we've done it all. I think that's a big lesson for me.
Well, and for both of us, I mean, I think, you know, you and I probably both come across to people's listening and watching this podcast, boy, they kind of have their acts together. You and I both know, as I said 20 minutes ago, I think most of the lessons I've learned because I've made bad mistakes, right? That's cost time, that's cost money, that's hurt people, that's damaged reputations, that's impacted organizational performance. And, you know, if there's only any good in that, it's that once you make the same mistake two or three times, you start getting smarter about that same mistake and you don't make that one quite as often anymore.
Hey, absolutely. Listen, Andy, I've already probably taken longer than I should because I couldn't get my tech story right at the start, but you patiently stayed with me, and I think that could be a little test of your leadership when you passed with flying colors, because you could have dropped me. Thank you for staying with me.
Pleasure.
It's been great. I'm always aware, I think, gosh, I could talk about this for hours and then, but am I just being boring about it, you know? But I'm obviously talking to somebody who obviously aligned. I'd like our listeners to be able to access, at least if they're not in the States, to be able to access your knowledge and your work. So I'm going to put your LinkedIn on show notes. Is there anything else you'd like to kind of promote while you hear about your work? Because it's fascinating stuff, mate.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that one of my coaches told me, Andy, you need to pull together. You've talked about leaders being able to hold hard conversations. And so I've got a little 8-page ebook on the 3 imperative leadership conversations. Rob, if they simply go to leadershipmaterials.com, that'll take them to the page on my website where they can sign up to get this 8-page ebook on the 3 imperative leadership conversations, leadership materials. In fact, Rob, as a podcaster and somebody who's got a strong web presence, Rob, I couldn't believe 2 years ago when every good web name is taken, but leadershipmaterials.com was still available. My coach said, Andy, grab that leadershipmaterials.com because it's an easy one to remember, leadershipmaterials.com, and they'll get that resource. So, yeah, and I appreciate the time that I've had with you. I've got a colleague in the UK that he and I podcast regularly together, Sam Bishop. He comes out of the rugby background, but he's like you, where he recognizes the lessons in premier sports translate over into premier business because it's all about discipline and execution, isn't it?
100%. Absolutely. Well, I'm certainly going to head over to Leadership Materials and grab myself the ebook because that's something I haven't got, and I'll be devouring that because it's just my street. Andy, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. And hopefully we'll catch up again.
Thanks, Rob. Yep, and it was my pleasure. Thank you.